Broke people and the majority of America are working that way they can make money to buy a nicer car. They're working to make money that way they can have a bigger home. They're working to make money that way they can have another vacation. But you're never going to be able to build wealth if you're constantly making money just to spend it. If you want to become wealthy, you have to make money to buy.
What's up, everybody? I am Jaspreet Singh, and welcome to the Minority Mindset.
Most of us have heard that you need to invest your money if you want to get rich. But no one tells us, where do you actually invest your money? That's why today I want to go over five different assets that you can consider buying, starting with stocks, then real estate, then businesses, then cryptocurrencies, then gold. That way you can understand different types of assets that you can use your money to buy, that way you can use your money to actually make money. Because the real key to becoming wealthy isn't by making a big salary, it's by making money and then using this money that you're working to earn to buy assets. Because there's no limit to how many assets that you can own, there's no limit to how much these assets can pay you, but there's a limit to how much you can do. And this is where now you have to really shift the way you think from going from that consumer mindset of just trying to make money to buy things to making money to buy assets and then using your assets to buy things. This is what the wealthy people are doing. Wealthy people make money that way they can buy more assets, that way their assets can pay for their lifestyle. Broke people and the majority of America are working that way they can make money to buy a nicer car. They're working to make money that way they can have a bigger home. They're working to make money that way they can have another vacation. But you're never going to be able to build wealth if you're constantly making money just to spend it. If you want to become wealthy, you have to make money to buy assets and then use these assets to actually make you money. That way you can make this money without you having to physically go to work. That way you can keep getting paid no matter what you're doing. That way next time you go on a vacation, your assets continue to pay you. Now the question is, which assets do you buy? And I'm going to be going over five in this video. Let me start by talking about number one, which is the stock market and stock market assets. See, when most people think about investing the money in the stock market, they're thinking, how can I buy the next Amazon? But that's not the only way that you can make money in the stock market. And in fact, that's how most people end up losing money in the stock market, is because they're trying to find the next hot stock without a long-term game plan, and they're just trying to find the next way to make money quickly. And that's why the majority of people end up losing money in the stock market, even though the stock market has gone up historically over the last century, even though we've had periods of market crashes, we've had periods of recessions pretty much every decade, but yet most people want to continue trying to find the next hot trend, the next hot stock, the next hot meme stock, instead of actually trying to find the next real investment. And I'm going to break this down into three different categories. Number one, we'll talk about the different things that you can invest your money in the stock market. These are things like stocks, index funds, mutual funds, and ETFs. Then I'm going to go into investing in cash flow producing stocks versus non-cash flow producing stocks. And then I'm going to go over what is your stock market investing strategy, whether it's a passive strategy or an active strategy. Let's jump into now understanding the difference between stocks, ETFs, mutual funds, and index funds. When you go out and you invest in a company like Amazon, you're investing in one individual company and you're taking on all the risk. And this is what most people think stock market investing is trying to find the next hot stock. But for 90 to 95, maybe even 98% of people, you should not be investing in individual companies, because when you invest in an individual company, you need to be keeping up with the company. You need to be keeping up with the earnings calls. You need to be keeping up with the finances of a company. You need to be keeping up with what the company is doing on the innovation side. You need to be keeping up with the moat of the company. How easy is it for competitors to come in to compete with this company? And if you're not interested or not willing to or don't have the time to do so, you probably shouldn't be investing in individual companies, because then when you see a company that you invest in go down and you don't understand what's going on, it could be much easier for you to panic and sell, or it could be much easier for you to go in and buy because you keep hearing the stock go up. And this is where now understanding if you are interested in actually doing all that work and taking on that risk, because the reality is when things are good, you get all the benefit. If Amazon takes over the world and you own the Amazon stock, hey, you're going to make a lot of money because the Amazon stock is going to go up. But if the CEO of Amazon drives the company into the ground and they go bankrupt, you lose all of your money, because now your money goes on to zero. And that risk can be a really hard pill to swallow for people, especially when things are going down, but it's very easy to understand when things are going up. But the alternative is, instead of investing in an individual company, you can look at investing in a fund. What are these funds? Well, you have index funds, ETFs, and mutual funds. The way the index funds work is these are what are considered passively managed funds, meaning they give you exposure to a certain group of stocks, which is managed by a computer, which means that the fees that you pay on these funds are significantly lower than when they're managed by, say, a person. So there are index funds that give you exposure to something like the S&P 500, which is a group of the largest 500 companies on the stock market. And if one of the companies in this fund starts to struggle and they're no longer one of the 500 largest companies, a computer can kick that company out and put a new company in. That way it's all automatic. So you have index funds that can give you exposure to many different types of funds, like the S&P 500 is one. There are index funds that can give you exposure to the Dow Jones. There are index funds that can give you exposure to the NASDAQ. There are index funds that give you exposure to healthcare stocks. There's a lot of different types of index funds out there, but these are generally passively managed, so the fees are less. The second thing about index funds is that there are restrictions to how often an index fund trades. So if you wanted to go out and buy the Amazon stock, you can buy and sell that stock in a second. Versus with an index fund, they generally only trade one time a day. This way, you don't have that same volatility and you can't have people just buying in and out of index funds. You can buy it or you can sell it once in a day and that's it, because these are long-term investments. And the third thing you have to understand about index funds is that they generally have minimums of how much money you need to invest in order to purchase an index fund. It might be $500, it might be $3,500, it might be $5,000, where you have to invest a certain amount of money in order to own an index fund. A mutual fund works kind of like an index fund, except mutual funds are generally actively managed. So now, instead of having a computer manage and create the algorithms, with a mutual fund, you generally have a person, a money manager, who is working to try to beat the market. Now, this might sound good in theory, but many times this higher fee is not going to justify the returns that you get. Because what we've seen happen over the last decade, Moody's did a study and they found that about 75% of the time, a high-paid money manager managing the mutual fund did not outperform the market. Meaning if you just bought a low-cost fund, you would have gotten a better return after factoring the fees. So is a mutual fund ever worth it? No. Just understand that the higher fees are going to make it less attractive, so you want to pay attention to the fees. Mutual funds also trade generally one time a day, and they also generally have a restriction on how much money you need in order to go out and buy a mutual fund. Then you have ETFs, which are kind of a hybrid between index funds, mutual funds, and stocks, because ETFs can be either passively managed or actively managed, just depending on whatever the ETF is. But the big difference between ETFs and index funds and mutual funds is that ETFs trade just like stocks, meaning you can buy in and out of an ETF as many times in a day as you want because they trade just like stocks. So if you want to buy an ETF in the morning and sell it in the afternoon, you can do that. And generally, ETFs don't have minimums of how much money you need to invest if you want to actually own an ETF. So what is the right thing for you? Well, this just depends on what your goals are and what you like. Me personally, and I can't tell you what to do. You got to always do your own due diligence and never blindly trust a random guy on YouTube. Don't do what I do. I'm just telling you what I do. I personally like ETFs because they're the most convenient and they're easy for me to purchase and they're easy for me to sell. And I like that convenience factor with ETFs. So for me, I like ETFs. But this is where now you have to understand, what is your goal when you invest your money? Because for me, I like cash flow. Cash flow means that when you put your money into this thing, yeah, you want this thing to go up in value, but it's also paying you while you wait. And in the stock market, this payment is called a dividend. A dividend is when a stock pays you money for doing nothing except owning the stock. Not all stocks pay dividends, but some stocks do. And if a company is paying out a dividend, this means a few things that you want to understand. Because number one, it means that a company is making a healthy profit. And now, if a company has this profit, they can do three things with this extra cash. They can save this money for an emergency or a rainy day. They can invest this money back into the company to invest and open more stores, to invest in research and development and to help grow the company. And the third thing that they can do if they don't want to invest this money back into the company or if they don't want to save this money is they can give this money away to their shareholders, meaning the owners of the company. Meaning people like you. If you own one share of a company, You are one of the owners of the company, and if they give this money away through the form of a dividend, that literally means they're going to give you a check, or they're going to deposit this money directly into your brokerage account, which is a payment that you get for doing nothing except owning the stock. Now, this can sound good for you, but it has its pros and cons that I want you to understand, because number one, this means that generally a company's stock price won't grow as fast, because now instead of using their money to grow their company and grow the valuation of their company, meaning grow the stock price, they're just giving it away. Second, this also means that you have to pay taxes, because when you get paid, you have to pay taxes. And so now when you get paid a dividend, there's taxes that you have to pay on that money, even if you automatically reinvest that dividend. If you get $1,000 worth of dividends and you reinvest all of it back into the company, well, you still have to pay taxes on that $1,000. So something you have to understand, although the tax rate that you pay on qualified dividends is the lower capital gains tax rates, meaning generally you get a lower tax rate on your dividend income than your income that you get from your job. So it makes up for that. But this is where now you have to understand, what do you want to get from your investments? Do you want cash flow, or do you want to see more growth in the stock? Because if you're investing in a growth company, like a startup company, they're not going to be paying out dividends. Because if a startup is paying out dividends, that means that they're using their money not to grow the company, but just to make their shareholders richer. And if you're a startup, you want to go out and get bigger. You want to get more of the market share. You want to get a bigger share of the bigger pie out there. And that means you got to use your money to grow quicker and faster instead of just trying to make your owners richer. So if you want to see the big growth in a stock price, well, then you're probably not going to be investing in the dividends. If you want more slow and steady growth, then dividends can be a better option for you, because you also get that cash flow. And this is where you got to find the right strategy for you. For me, I like cash flow. That's why 75% of my investment portfolio, not my stock market portfolio, but my total investment portfolio, are cash flow producing assets. And in my stock market portfolio, I have a lot of ETFs that pay me with cash flow. And I own some companies that also pay me with cash flow. Because for me, I like cash flow. Most of my investments are cash flow producing. Are all of them cash flow producing? No. But most of them are, because I like that cash flow. Because the advantage of this cash flow is you can go out and buy this thing and it will continue to pay you even when you're going out and sleeping, or you're going out on vacation and you're going out and traveling. You're continuing to get the cash flow. For me, I want to have a system where my cash flow is funding my life. That way now I don't have to worry about my money, because I own assets that are paying me with cash flow. That's why I like cash flow. And then the third thing you have to decide is, what type of investor do you want to be? Do you want to be more of a passive investor, or do you want to be more of an active investor? An active investor is what I call somebody who is now actively investing in individual companies, where now you're researching the company, you're investing in this company for the long term, and you're going to keep up with this company. A passive investor is where now you set up a system where every week, every 2 weeks, or every month, you're just buying more of the funds, whether it's ETFs, mutual funds, or index funds. You're just buying more of these funds no matter what's happening. And this is consistent, it's passive, and it's automatic. Now, you don't have to pick one. I have both a passive investing system and an active investment system, where now I'm looking for individual companies to invest in. And I also have a system where every Wednesday I have money that's leaving my checking account that's automatically invested into my portfolio of ETFs. And this happens no matter what, whether the market's up, whether the market's down, whether we're in a market crash, whether we're in a market boom. This strategy does not change. I guess the only time it might change is if you go through a market crash. Maybe I'll buy more, but that's it. This is where you have to find the right strategy for you, for how involved you want to be as an investor. Now, let's diagram this out so you know exactly what this looks like.
Let me start by going over a few dividend paying stocks. And again, as a reminder, I'm not telling you what to invest in. These are just examples. So at the time of recording this video, Verizon is paying out a 7% dividend on their stock. McDonald's is paying around a 2% dividend on their stock. Bristol Myers, the healthcare company, is paying around 3.2% dividends on their stock, and then Apple is paying around 0.5% of dividends on their stock. Now, what does this mean? This means that if you go out and invest $100 into a company that's paying, say, a 7% dividend, that means for each $100 that you invest over the course of 1 year, you're gonna get $7, which is 7% of $100 in cash flow just for owning that stock. That doesn't include the stock price going up or down, that's just the cash flow that you're getting. Now, this percentage can change because the real amount that you wanna pay attention to is the dollar amount of the dividend that you're getting. Now, this dividend that you get is typically paid out every quarter, meaning every 3 months. So every 3 months you get a payment, and that payment would be 1/4 of whatever the total dividend amount is that you're getting over the year. And if you don't want to invest in individual companies, you can also look at investing in things like ETFs. Now, here are again some examples not telling you what to invest in. Number one is SPY. This is an ETF that gives you exposure to the S&P 500, again, which is a group of the 500 largest companies on the stock market. At the time of recording this video, if you invest in SPY, the S&P 500, you would get about a 1.5% dividend. And when you invest in this one ETF, you're getting exposure to the 500 biggest companies in the stock market. Then you have DIA, which is paying around a 2.8% annual dividend right now. DIA gives you exposure to the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is a group of about 30 companies that are spread across different sectors across the stock market. This is one of the most commonly tracked indexes when people talk about the stock market. If you've ever heard of people talking about the Dow Jones, well, this tracks the Dow Jones. Then you have QQQ. This is another ETF that tracks the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is a group of 100 non-financial companies. Most companies currently in the NASDAQ are tech companies, but it's a group of 100 very large non-financial companies at the current time. It's paying around a 0.6% annual dividend. And then we have VYM. This is an index which tracks high dividend paying companies. I started it because this is an ETF that I'm personally invested in, just so you know, as a disclaimer. So this invests in companies that are paying out dividends. So if you're looking for cash flow, this is an ETF that focuses on investing in cash flow producing companies. Currently, they're paying out just over a 3% annual dividend. Before I go on to the second asset class that you can consider investing in, if you do want to learn more about how to actually start investing with a step-by-step guide on how to start generating cash flow and how to start investing even if you don't have a ton of money, again, we have a free ebook through Market Insiders that goes through how you can start investing and start generating this type of cash flow. The ebook is completely free, so if you want to read this ebook, I got the link to how you can join down in the description below. The second asset class where you can consider investing your money is into physical real estate. This is one of my favorite places to invest my money, where now when you invest in real estate, what you're doing is you're taking your money, you're going out and you're buying a physical property. This could be a single family home. This could be a condo. This could be an apartment complex. This could be an office building. This could be a retail building. This could be a mixed use building. This is going to take more capital and more work on your end, but it allows you to own something that you can see, feel, and touch, and you're buying something ideally for the purpose of creating cash flow. Now, there's a lot of different goals people have when it comes to investing in real estate. For me, my number one goal when I invest in real estate is cash flow. Meaning, when I buy a property, I don't care or try to speculate where property values are going to be next year or 5 years from now. I'm buying the property based off of one goal. How much cash flow will this property generate this year, next year, the year after that, and the year after that? Meaning, if I have to invest a dollar today, how much cash flow will this dollar pay me every single year from here on out? This is my analysis when I invest in real estate. I don't like looking at speculation, meaning how much will property values rise next year or the year after that, because it's speculation. There's no real way for me to guess or predict how high property values are going to go. That's too risky for me. Instead, I can look at what this property can generate in rent today, I can predict what the expenses are going to be, and then I can pretty accurately calculate how much my profit is going to be every single month. And based off of that, if there's enough profit, I will consider buying this real estate investment deal. Now, for me, I look for a 7% cash on cash return, meaning for every dollar that I invest, I'm looking for a 7% cash flow. If I invest a dollar, I want 7 cents of profit after expenses hitting my bank account every single year. If I invest $100,000, I want $7,000 worth of profit hitting my bank account each year from the cash flow alone. If property values go up, hey, that's icing on the cake. If property values fall, oh well, I'm still getting the cash flow.
The reason why I want this type of cash flow is because now if we go into a recession or bad things happen in the economy and I have to lower rents, I still have enough margin in there that I can lower rents, still be competitive, and continue to not have to bleed cash. Because a big thing that happens in the real estate game when you go through these cycles is people overleverage. They get excited about an area, they get excited about a property, they go in and they overpay, and now their expenses are so high because when you overpay, you have to take on more debt. When you take on more debt, you have a bigger monthly mortgage payment. When you overpay, you also have a bigger property tax bill because your property taxes are valued based on the value of the property. So if you're paying more money, your property taxes are going to be higher, and you also have a higher insurance payment because when you buy a more expensive property or you pay more for a property, you're insuring a more expensive property, meaning your monthly insurance payments are also higher. So now when you go out and overpay for a property, you have higher expenses, and then if bad things happen, you don't have any margin. You don't have any leftover room to protect yourself. So now if you have to lower the rents or if you see vacancies, you can very quickly become underwater, and now you don't have a way to continue making your payments. This is why you definitely don't want to chase real estate deals, because they can really end up biting you in the butt. Because when you go out and invest in real estate, it's much more intense versus going out and buying a stock. Because when you go out and invest in real estate, now you're actually managing and operating the property, because now this is under your control. When you go out and invest in Amazon, or you go out and invest in the S&P 500, you have a CEO who is managing this company. All you do was buy a piece of the ownership and a piece of the profits. When you go out and you buy in a rental property, you are the management team. Now, I don't recommend you going out and actually managing the property yourself. I don't manage any of my rental properties. I hired a property management company whose sole job is to manage the rentals. Their job is to find the right tenants. Their job is to screen the tenants. Their job is to collect the rents. Their job is to make sure that there's no issues in the property, and where there are issues, to handle and manage the repairs, to make sure that the bills are paid, and to make sure that the properties are in good condition. And this is where now, if you have a good property manager, it can make your life a whole lot easier. If you have a bad property manager, it can make your life a whole lot more stressful. And this is where now that hurdle of getting involved in real estate is difficult, because a lot of people make it seem that investing in real estate is this like amazing thing that is so simple. All you got to do is go out and buy a rental property, hand over the keys to a property manager, and now you're going to be rolling in the money. At least that's how it made it seem to me when I first started investing in real estate, because when I first started investing in real estate, I didn't have any guidance. I didn't know any real estate investors. And so I had to figure it out on my own. And all these books made it seem so easy and like it would not be that painful. But getting started is so difficult and so time consuming, because you have to find all the right people. You have to find the right real estate agent. You have to find the right property manager. You have to find the right contractor. You have to find the right real estate agent. You have to find, the real estate attorney. You have to find the right real estate accountant. You have to find a good property inspector. You have to learn how to deal with city inspectors. There's a big learning curve. But once you get over the learning curve, you find the right people, you go through the pain, you go through the mistakes, which is a process, because I've been there. Those mistakes can be expensive, they can be difficult, and they can be very stressful. But once you get through that and you figure it out, then it can be much easier and much simpler. Like when I go out and I invest in real estate today, the process is much more streamlined because I have a team of people that I know who I can work with and rely on, versus when I was first getting started, it was very difficult. The first deal is the hardest. Maybe even the first three. For me, it was the first three deals that were really the most difficult. But once it got past the first three deals, it became much more streamlined, much easier. And this is where now, if you can go through that hurdle, if you're willing to go through the process, you will be able to succeed, but you have to be willing to put in that work. And the next big question or concern that people have is the cost, because real estate investing is much more capital intensive, meaning it's going to take more money. And this is really now a matter of priorities. And what I've seen is when you prioritize investing in real estate, you will find a way to do it. It might not happen for a number of months, maybe even a couple of years, but if you prioritize becoming a real estate investor, you will find a way to put aside the money. That way you can go out and buy property. And when you go out and become a real estate investor, the nice thing is, well, you can build the cash flow, because now you own a hard asset that you can rent out that's paying you with cash flow. And in addition to that, you also get some of the biggest and best tax breaks that a tax code has to offer. As a licensed attorney who is not your attorney, I can tell you that the tax code provides a lot of benefits to real estate investors, and in order for you to capitalize on these benefits that a tax code has to offer, you have to go out and actually invest in real estate as an investor. That way you can capitalize on things like the depreciation deductions, the ordinary and necessary business expenses, and everything else that the real estate tax code has to offer. Because now with real estate, not only can you generate income and pay less money in taxes legally, but you can also flip properties. And when I say flip properties, I don't mean like literally flipping properties. I mean buying a property, holding on to it for at least a year, and then selling the property. If you do that and you make a big profit, well, you can defer the taxes on that. So what I mean is, if you go out and buy a $200,000 property today, and let's just assume that you hold on to this property for 5 years, and now you happen to buy this property in a great area where rents are rising, property values are rising, you bought the property for $200,000, and hypothetically, 5 years later, you sold this property for $1 million. Now you'd have a big profit, $800,000 worth of profit, which is a big taxable income. But with real estate, you can do something called the 1031 exchange, which allows you to take all $1 million, go out and buy a new bigger property that's going to pay you with more cash flow, pay you with bigger profits, and pay $0 in taxes today legally, because the real estate has that 1031 exchange benefit, which you can't do somewhere else. If you bought a stock for $200,000, 5 years later, it goes up to $1 million and you sell it, and then you take all $1 million and buy another stock, you still have to pay taxes on that profit that you got. With real estate, you have special rules that don't apply to other places. But before you go out and do that, talk to a professional. 1031 exchanges are very logistically complex. There's a lot of rules and regulations around them, and you got to make sure you have the right people around you. So make sure you have a good accountant, a good attorney, and a good 1031 professional who's going to help you with that. But just understand that when you invest in real estate, you can build cash flow to fund your lifestyle. Like when I was getting started on my financial education journey, when I started investing in real estate, I realized that, holy moly, I can make cash flow. I can get paid without me having to do something, because at the time I was running an event planning company, and the only way I got paid was if I was hosting a party, or I was working at a wedding, or I was doing some event. And then I realized, whoa, I rented this condo out for $600 a month, and now I'm getting this cash flow, which wasn't really passive at the time because I had no idea what to do to make it passive, but I could kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel that one day this could be passive. And from there, I realized the game is just stacking cash flow. If I can buy enough rental properties, then I can make enough cash flow to fund my lifestyle. If each unit can make me $300 a month, how many units do I need to be able to fund my lifestyle? Is it 10? Is it 20? Is it 100? And then just going out and figuring out how to make it happen. And that was the name of the game for me for a long time, was just buying the properties, buying the units, stacking the cash flow. That way now you have this consistent cash flow coming in that I don't have to work to earn. The third thing that you can consider investing in if you want to build wealth is in businesses. Now, when it comes to businesses, there's two different ways that you can do this. One can be in your own business, and the second can be in somebody else's business. My number one place where I invest my money is into my own businesses. Now, I don't really consider this a traditional investment, because when I invest my money into my own businesses, like into Briefs Media, which is my newsletter company, that is an active investment because I run that company. I am the CEO of that company. I work every single day to operate and manage Briefs Media. So when I invest money into Briefs Media, I'm working to actively grow that money. And that is another form of investment. It's a way for me to now put my money to work, not into real estate, not into stocks. In fact, over the last couple of years, I've been actively investing less money into real estate, less money actively into stocks. That way I have more money to invest into my own company, because I want to grow my own company. Because when you invest your money into stocks or real estate, you're trying to get, again, a 7 to 10% return on your money, which is a great return over the long term, especially as a passive investor. But when you're investing your money into your own business, there's no limit to the types of returns that you can get. So financially, you can get higher returns. It comes with more risk, but then you're also able to grow whatever it is that you're working on. And for me, Briefs Media has a lot more upside right now, which is why I've been investing a lot more aggressively in that. Again, it works for me because I am an entrepreneur. I am that type of person. And so I'm willing to accept that risk that if the company goes bankrupt, I will lose all the money that I invested into it and all my time that I put into it. but I'm willing to take on the risk. If you're not an entrepreneur, you don't have a business idea that you want to invest in, that's okay. You can also invest in other people's business ideas. You can invest in startups. And this was something that I started doing around the pandemic time, because I started seeing that investing in startups has become much more accessible thanks to something called crowdfunding. There's new regulations that allow regular people, people like you, me, anyone with as little as $100 to invest in crowdfunded or startups with small amounts of money. And with this, you also have to understand that when you invest in somebody else's startup, you will probably lose money. The statistic is like 8 to 9 out of 10 startups will fail or go bankrupt within the first 5 years. Meaning, most of the startups that you invest your money into will lose money, period. You have to understand that when you go in. But the goal isn't to lose money always. The goal is that when you make money that one time, it should hopefully make up for all the losses. But it's a whole different skill set and a whole different type of work and risk, I guess you can call it. But something for me that I really enjoy, because I love working with entrepreneurs. I am an entrepreneur myself, and I have built a platform, fortunately, where I can also help grow entrepreneurs. I can help provide awareness to companies that I've partnered with. So for me, I love this type of startup investing, although I don't do as much of it as maybe I would like, because again, I'm focused on building my own brand, but I have invested in a handful of different startup companies. Now, a few platforms that you can consider using, and again, I'm not sponsored by any of these companies, I'm just letting you know who they are. Number one is WeFunder. Quick disclaimer, I am an investor in the WeFunder Corporation. Number two is Republic. Number three is Start Engine. These are three different platforms where you can go and invest in startups. Now, again, the way that you get paid here is if the startup that you invested in either goes public or it gets acquired. Goes public, meaning it trades on the stock market, or gets acquired, meaning it gets bought out by another bigger company. If the company that you invested in doesn't get acquired, it doesn't go public, you might never see that money again. If the company that you invested in goes bankrupt, you will never see your money again. So it's very risky, but it has a lot of upside, because it's like investing in a new company in the very early stages of its life. And so you can have a lot of upside, but a lot of risk. And if that's something you're interested in, it could be a piece of your investment portfolio. Probably not, don't want to make it a huge chunk of your investment portfolio, especially if you're just starting off, but it can be a small little piece of your investment portfolio. It's kind of a fun way for you to invest in smaller startup entrepreneurs, as long as you're willing to understand the risk. The fourth place where you can consider investing your money is into cryptocurrency. Now, cryptocurrency, again, very speculative, very volatile. And the thing that I want to kind of point out here is in my total investment portfolio, 80% of my investments are in things like stocks and real estate. If I take out my own business, I have 80% of my money going into stocks and real estate. 20% is in more of what I call the speculative investments. These are things like startups, these are things like cryptocurrencies, and these are things like precious metals like physical gold. 20% of my investment portfolio are these speculative investments. 80% stocks and real estate. You're going to figure out the right percentage for you, but understand now cryptocurrency falls under that speculative side, because it can go to zero and it can also go up very quickly. Now, the reason why I like cryptocurrency is because I have seen the benefit with things like cryptocurrency. I've had contractors that work with me and for me overseas. And paying contractors overseas, sending money that far, is difficult and expensive. I used to have to go to the bank. I used to work with a different bank, an older bank, where I had to go to the bank to send wires. Sending a wire takes time and it's expensive. It was like $45 or something, $40 to $45 to send a wire overseas. And I was traveling. I was in California at the time, where my bank, didn't have little regional operations over there. So now I had a contractor that needed to be paid, and I couldn't send him money. I couldn't send him money through PayPal because his country didn't accept PayPal. I couldn't send him money through Payoneer, or I think they changed their name, but whatever that platform was where you can send money to countries overseas. And so it was a big mess trying to send money to him when I didn't have access to my bank. And then I asked him if I could send him some cryptocurrency. He said, sure. And so I sent him cryptocurrency payments. He got it in a fraction of a second, or maybe like 5 seconds, and it cost me a couple cents. And that was a big light bulb moment for me, where it's like, wow, this has really changed the game of how I can transfer money and how money is done. And so because of that, I own cryptocurrency. Now, I don't own a bunch of the smaller coins. I invest in the big things like Bitcoin and Ethereum and a couple other smaller ones, but mainly Bitcoin. And for me, this is a speculative investment. For me, it's an investment in the future. I believe in the blockchain, but I also understand the risks. I know it can go to zero. If it goes to zero, is it going to affect me? Not really. But if it goes up a lot, hey, that'd be cool. It'd be nice. It'd be fun. So it's part of the speculative investment, something that I believe in. I believe in the blockchain, but I also understand the risks. And that's how I invest my money, where 80% of my investments are stocks and real estate. 20% are some of the speculative things like startups, cryptocurrency, and gold. Which brings me to the fifth place where you can consider investing your money, which is a precious metal like physical gold. For me, I own some physical gold. And when I say physical gold, I don't mean an ETF or paper stocks of gold. I mean actual physical gold. It makes up 2% of my investment portfolio. And for me, I just buy some physical gold every month, and that's it. The reason why I buy gold is not because I'm expecting gold to shoot up in value. I really don't even monitor the price of gold. For me, it's an alternative way to save money because the way that I look at it, again, this is just me. Don't listen to what I do. Make your own decisions and follow your own advice. But for me, what I do and the way that I look at it is, if I were to go to my backyard and bury $50,000 worth of cash and also $50,000 worth of gold today, and then I covered it up, and then 10 years from now, I go and dig up these two things, these two piles, I think that the gold will have more buying power than the $50,000 with the cash in the future. Because of that, I look at gold as an alternative way to save money, and I look at gold as a hedge against the worst case scenario types of situations. And by worst case scenario, I mean of something happening to the dollar, something happening to our economy. That is where gold could potentially have more value. So I don't look at gold like an investment. I look at gold like an alternative way to save money. It's an alternative insurance against doomsday scenarios. So that's why I own physical gold. And that's why the five places where I invest my money. And again, don't copy me. Don't blindly follow a random guy on YouTube. Do your own research. For me, the five places where I invest are: number one, my own business and startups. Number two, physical real estate. Number three, stocks. Number four, cryptocurrency. And number five, physical gold. And this is where you can find the right combination for you.